Hey everybody, welcome to MyOpia Movies. This week we are covering the Mel Gibson, Helen Hunt movie, What Women Want. It is weird. It is weird, yeah. But we have friend of the show, co-comedian with me on Cineprov, Fitzion, to make sure that we keep all the gender politics in proper order, because this movie is very sexually weird, so enjoy that. You might ask, well, is this the rom-com that should have been the, you know, Valentine's Day movie? No, I think Daredevil is almost more romantic. Anyway, thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Letterboxd. Join the Patreon. We have extra stuff there, and we'll wrap up the Harry Potter stuff this month. So thanks for everyone who's been listening to that. I hope you guys have been enjoying it. Otherwise, thanks. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we start off our February. Well, I guess it's not the beginning, but we have a rom-com. We're doing a rom-com, and this is the most romantic movie we could have done.
Certainly is.
Mm-hmm. Strong opinions here on Myopia this week as we dive into 2000s Nancy Meyer movie What Women Want, starring Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt. I'm Nick Hoffman, your host and riffer on Cineprov, and we have a Cine family member here.
I am Christine, a.k.a. Fitzy, and I'm also a member of Cineprov.
And if you guys have listened to, if you're on our Patreon, she's on, what, half the riffs?
Yes.
Something like that? and if you have not heard us, join Cineprov, of course, on the Facebook, and you can see our free riffs, and we do trivia every couple weeks, so you know, she shows up there, too. And we got?
You got to nurture that. You know, I pop in a couple times here and there. You know, I say a couple funny things, but I just want to say, particularly with this, I'm a feminine. I'm a very emotional guy, and I'm glad I'm here today to talk about this.
And like Alan Alda and Mel Gibson's character, he grew up in the Vegas vaudeville show, in the burlesque circuit.
Yes.
Right,
yes. No. the African version, meaning the Muslim version, meaning I was raised by women. Yes. With hijabs and stuff. So it's kind of like the opposite of Vegas, you know.
Oh, dude, you grew up in exactly the opposite
of Vegas. Yeah. No skin, everything covered, head to toes, ankles and stuff. So, yeah.
Now, when he says no skin, he doesn't mean he grew up in like a Rob Zombie movie. He means he grew up with women covered, as opposed to the cleavage introduction we see. Like, this is literally like Nancy Meyer watched that episode of The Simpsons,
right,
where Bart is like working the burlesque show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's just like just boobs in his face. And I mean, I get it. At one point, I too was 12. This is a very weird start to a movie.
It really especially, is.
Yeah.
Especially a Nancy Meyers movie.
Right. Nancy Meyers is known for just having like beautiful apartments.
Exactly. I mean, those come along, but
they do.
But the set design is
that was lovely. I mean,
it is a cool office.
Yeah.
He has a cool office. It's in a cool office place. I mean, and eventually they have like, we'll get to the Rat Pack in this. Frank Sinatra's in every damn scene.
At some point,
it's even just playing.
That's true.
They open the window to turn up the volume. Like, it's just as though Frank Sinatra Jr. is singing in the street. But, like, where's your bed going to be? Let's dance in your bed.
This is a really sexual movie. It is.
It is.
It is.
That's the most Nancy Meyers apartment, and it is empty. Other than the weird fantasy or, like, I can't believe I'm going to wear this dress when I lose my virginity.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, help me. which is, I'm sure, what you thought when you brought your prom dress.
No, my date was gay, so I did not think that. It's quite the opposite.
I mean, but, like, that's such, like, a Hughes movie. Like 16 Candles, kind of like, this is the time we all lose our virginity. And, like, by that point, like, by the way, her boyfriend is, like, 35.
Yeah.
And that bothered the hell out
of me. Yeah, that was definitely.
See, I couldn't. That's not my high school. Full disclosure, I wasn't that kid. Yeah, I was the dude just playing video games, but I wasn't out here thinking about, like, okay, we fantasized about losing our virginities, but it was all guy talk. It was like, yeah, man, I'm going to lose my virginity. We didn't. It happened to me in college and stuff, and we were just, and yeah, that wasn't my problem or anything like that. It's just not.
Well, I mean,
I was dating a color guard girl, so my chances were pretty good at the time.
Oh, okay.
But by that point, we'd already been dating 2 years. Like, the idea that you save yourself for prom, like, some sort of, like, Mormon, a ritual of masculinity is very bizarre. Or for her, a ritual of being a 15-year-old who got invited to prom by this 35-year-old man.
Yep.
I mean, he's like, yeah, no, I'm a scumbag. Like, he looks like a scumbag immediately.
What was his name?
Scumbag.
Cameron.
Oh, dude, that is such a 2000 scumbag. dude.
With the lip piercing and the hair gel and the leather jacket and such.
But he looks like he's 45.
It not does, like 30. It was uncomfortable watching.
Yeah. I will say, we'll get into this, but at least Mel Gibson, most of the women he's with are age appropriate.
Like, yeah, that's true. That's true.
He's kind of like mid-40s at this point, but he's dating Marissa Tomei. He's with Helen Hunt. Like, he could, like, this is 2000. He could have been, like, against a slutty Tara Reid because he can read her mind and just hook up with her.
Is there anything to read there, really?
Well, they make that joke. Like, he looks at Delta Burke and you just hear the wind whistling through the willows and you're just like, oh, I get it. Oh, I get it, Nancy. anyway, we're here. Fitzy, you want to give me the plot synopsis?
Well, there's a garbage male chauvinist pig who works for an ad agency, and he is tasked with this new woman, Helen Hunt, coming on and wanting him to experience the products that they want to promote, because that's what you do with advertising,
right?
Is you kind of feel your way through. And in a freak accident, while he is trying on pantyhose and waxing his legs, he falls into a bathtub and gets shocked. And then all of a sudden he can hear women's innermost thoughts.
Including one dog who says, Monsieur, yeah, I have to poop.
Poo-poo. And then hilarity ensues. Male chauvinism ensues. Women not getting listened to in the real world ensues.
And there's no comeuppance. None. Literally until the last minute.
But then you still, I don't.
So would you classify this as a rom-com directed towards males or more for just females?
Well, I will say he is a good-looking man. Like, this is 2000 Mel Gibson. He's not a racist yet.
He's still a racist.
We just don't know he's a racist.
So I watched this with my girlfriend, and I got a quote from her. I'm going to say a quote from her.
Okay,
please. She says, and I quote, after The Patriot and Braveheart, 7-year-old Savannah would do anything for Mel Gibson. And she said that to my face. And I was just like, ugh. You know, and then so the movie didn't start off right from there.
I mean, and again, like, he's a charming motherfucker in this. Yeah. But you realize really quickly he's also a pig. Like, he doesn't know how old his daughter is, which is, again, like, it's 1950s sitcom dad bad, but it is bad. Like, oh, we haven't even gotten to this, but we'll get there. But, like, what's the song he listens to get in a female mind?
Do you remember? Bitch.
Bitch.
By Meredith Brooks,
I'm a bitch. And he's like, I don't know why this leg waxing thing is so bad. And you're just like, guys, you can't do all of this.
Have you ever waxed your legs before?
I have not.
It hurts. Yeah, I've waxed my legs. It hurts. For real, it does. It hurts.
I'm sure.
Just the legs. I only waxed just the legs.
Oh, dude. Yeah. We're fine.
Yeah, we're good.
I'm just saying, he's pretending like none of this matters. And you're just...
Yeah.
Then he electrocutes himself, which is very cathartic.
Yes.
So this is...
That was my favorite part of the movie.
And survives.
The morality of this story is eventually you have to nearly die 4 times, and then you might understand women a little
right.
bit.
Yeah.
I somehow think, even after the credits, he probably went back to being a pig.
Yeah. We have so much to get through in this movie. And you're right. Like, because here's the thing. If you just look into those baby blues, he's a charming guy, but this movie falls apart immediately.
It totally does.
And I love Helen Hunt in this. But again, all she does is get walked all over. Like, this, she's supposed to be a big, like, executive type. She's the creative director of what used to be the biggest, now is the third biggest firm in Chicago, which is still fucking big.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she bows out immediately. If you're that big in corporate America, you stand up for yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit. And Ellen Alda's like, I want the lavender tie. And that's kind of like, and I don't know what his job is, but he just sits back while they bicker. Right. Like, it's so weird.
It is.
All right, so let's start at the beginning. So we have a 11-year-old, 13-year-old boy just staring at some titties.
Yeah. As you do.
I mean, we've all been there. And you've been to Vegas, so you know that there's just titties.
There's boobs.
There are.
I've never been. I always wanted to go, but I've never been. But I'd imagine that's me, not 12, but 28 when I'm there too.
I mean, to be fair, the whole thing is, I mean, I think it's literally Alan Alda's backstory, right? Wasn't he someone who was raised, like not in like a call girl, but like, wasn't his family in burlesque? Didn't he grow up backstage at like burlesque shows? Am I making that up?
I don't know. I know Richard Pryor did.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you write what you know.
Right. Yeah. That's true. But anyway, so like we had this like kid who looks like he's out of Young Sheldon. Just sitting on top of like he's sitting as his mom is putting on makeup and like he's the mascot. And so like all these women just come up, stick their boobs in his face and like tussle his hair. And like they expect him to grow up normal. And
no,
he does. Turns out that there's no plot to this movie.
I mean, there's a little. Okay. What I have been doing ever since 2021 has been looking at perspective of things. So when things are terrible, I try to go in deep with the story.
Sure.
So it kind of makes sense the way that he, you know, grew up, treats women and things because, you know, he know how to do what he did because he was cute, always cute, got admired. And, you know, the father figures were always mob boss type people that's handing him money and stuff that slap girls' asses. And
dude,
that's what it equates to.
As yeah. He suddenly folds into a scene out of Casino, like, oh, you little scumbag, here's my fedora, let's count some ones. And they're just doing singles and doing blow and back at this Vegas show.
That's what he grew up. And the fact that, you know, if we first see him, you know, I guess off of a one-night stand, the chick left in the morning. He comes to with just a lipstick stain on his cheek and stuff after that Vegas montage.
Dude, very first, which is a weird smash cut because one of the other like Vegas dancing girls leaves the lipstick on his cheek.
Yeah.
It's the same girl.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
For his birthday every year.
It's Delta Burke. Delta Burke hooks up with him every year. Oh, God, help me. But yeah, okay. And Fitzy, please, you can lead us through this one because as a man, I'm also misogynist. So you've got to help us through the plot points here.
Well, I mean, I had a hard time getting past Mel Gibson being Mel Gibson, current day Mel Gibson.
Mm. Sure.
So that was kind of a sticky point.
Yeah.
And I've dated guys like that in the past, and I was triggered a little bit. I will admit.
Yeah. Smooth talkers.
And I work in advertising, but it's different now because...
Well, I mean, the whole thrust of the plot kicks in when Alan Alda goes, did you know that women buy things? Which is just...
That is ridiculous.
2000, my God.
They were talking about that in Mad Men, which was set much earlier.
Right. Like, the whole idea of, like, what are those cigarettes?
Virginia Slims.
Camel.
Well, no. I almost said Red Stripe, which I know is a beer. But, like, yeah, they're like, let's advertise directly to women. Let's make... At one point, there was a cigarette brand whose name I'm forgetting.
Is it the little skinny ones that look like lollipop sticks? The Capris?
No, not the Capris.
You got the Newports.
They not only picked the color, they changed the color and of the packaging and then sold it to fashion designers to make it the color of the year so that women would be like, oh my goodness, this cigarette.
Ooh, cool.
But like, that was the 50s.
Yeah, exactly.
But Alan Alda's like, now you know bikini models aren't going to work anymore. And he's like, what? And they cut to his office and there's just butts.
Yeah.
Right? it's not even like fully clad bikini models. It's like swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated, just like an ass. And you're just like,
that's professional.
Right. Yeah. And it's just like, well, I guess he's masturbating in his office. That was my, like, what is he doing? There's women. There's two women literally outside his door. And I don't know, like an intern who's like, I have an Ivy League degree, who's kissing his ass, who's just running errands for him. And she just has to show up and be like, I guess Mel Gibson has an erection now. I don't know what any of these people are supposed to think. And Delta Burke, when he can read her thoughts, it's just a long breeze whistling through her ears.
It was a very...
Well, I mean, you know, his other was Miss Tessmacher.
Right.
You know, so...
That's fair.
Who needs butts on your wall when you have Miss Tessmacher in the other room? I mean,
and to be fair, I imagine Delta Burke from Designing Women is confident enough to just show up and see those butts, and she's like, I got this. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's Delta Burke. meanwhile, he gets emasculated, ladies and gentlemen.
He does.
Nerd, what do you got?
All right, so I can understand from the board meeting room where Helle Hunt's character just shows in and just says, you know, and generally speaking, just as just the scene goes, she tries, you know, not necessarily pull her dick out and stuff. You're like, yo, I'm in charge or whatever, X, Y, and Z. But he does get emasculated where, you know, by the way, the company backstory wants to sell to females. And so they hire her. And basically she's like, listen, guys, you got to know what women want, and gives her basically a box full of pantyhose, lipsticks, bras,
sports bras,
waxing and stuff. And just like any other guy, Mel Gibson's character basically kind of like shrugs her off and he's like, nah, I get to do what I want because you got my job and stuff. And then, you know, I can definitely see just the rift of these two. Like, you know, they already know each other's characters as it begins with, but the one thing that I kind of found out, like, after he got to read these, before his accident, is that he actually attempted to do all these things to understand women, because I guess he did get emasculated to that point where he wanted to play at least the games with it. But then, unfortunately, we get into that Frank Sinatra dance montage before his accident, which I fell in love with him from that. I was like, I fucking hate Mel Gibson, but when he started dancing, I was like, that's pretty dope.
Dude, that dance scene, I mean, again, like, the problem is he's charming as fuck. The problem is he's an asshole. He's even an asshole in this movie.
Yeah.
And it works. It works.
Yeah, okay, so we should get to this. There's like a pink box. It's a pastel box filled with women's things, and he takes it because he wants to, I mean, not a team player. He wants to prove that not only he can do this, but, like, again, like you said, it's like big dick on the table. I'm going to be the fucking best at this.
Mm-hmm.
And so he grabs himself a bottle of red wine like men drink. He is a Frank Sinatra person, and this is a Nancy Meyer movie, so she's probably never actually dealt with someone like this. She's pretending. But it should be just a bottle of gravelly whiskey.
Absolutely.
But there he is with, like, not only a wine glass, but, like, a nice wine glass. This is where it feels almost the most Nancy Meyer, because he has, like, a massive apartment in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. And he has a beautiful wine glass sloshing it around. He's like, I need a little Frankie.
Right. Just to get inspired.
And then he does this incredible dance scene, which, again, this is in Chicago. The musical. This is Chicago, the city. And yet,
he does it.
Rocks it out.
This is the part. For a second, I'm just like, he's not that bad. You know, just for a second, I just fell in love with the art. You know, because he put work into it, and, like, that's even hard for me. You know,
I mean, and again, this is a 2000 Mel Gibson. He's 44, and he is just dancing.
Mm-hmm. It's no Kevin Kline in In-N-Out, but
no, he's not. which I guess one time we'll talk about. We'll have to do In-N-Out at one point. By the way, his daughter is Ashley Johnson, who you might know from nothing. She was the voice of Ellie in The Last of Us. She was the waitress in The Avengers, so her career's really gone.
That's what's up. Let's talk about his montage, you know, makeup exfoliant scene, because, like, let's be real, I'm a feminine guy. Besides putting up, you know, my nails in, I put the nose strip for the blackheads and things like that. I just don't want to say faults and stuff. I don't blow dry my hair because I got an afro, but, you know, I just want to point out some guys
do that. Well, apparently, blow drying your hair is going to be the thing that kills you one day, or makes you understand the opposite gender. Yes. Either way.
Yes.
I have had my toes painted by my daughter.
That's
and
nice.
She was 3 at the time, and she did okay. Especially since I don't have some toenails.
Was it relaxing, though? Just to
very relaxing. Something I've learned recently is there's such a thing called a hair mask. That's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are nice. I have a nice bathtub, and I have a TV I bring in there, so I do the baths.
Right.
With the masks.
Right.
It's very nice.
It's very nice.
I also don't electrocute myself and pretend to understand
what. That's understandable.
That's
yeah.
true. I mean, this could be a Jacob's Ladder scenario where he dies, and then this is his personal hell, where he has to listen to women, because I'd believe that.
Huh.
I would honestly believe that, like, I can't understand any of these talking breasts. And then he just goes crazy.
But what if, and I was thinking about this, when he's hearing what women are thinking, maybe it's just him projecting what he wants them to be thinking.
Dude, that's very you are 100% right. Because like Marissa Tomei is like, oh, I wish I had accepted when he asked me out. And Marissa Tomei has never looked at someone and goes, I wish I had accepted anything.
Yeah.
She other than being the sexiest Aunt May, she is completely in control of what's going on. She doesn't have to pretend like Mel Gibson is her one way out of this.
And Loretta Devine, all the actresses are so underused in this movie. Mm-hmm. With the talent they've assembled, it's Judy Greer's underused, Delta Burke's underused, Miss Tessmacher of Valerie Prine is underused. Don't get me started on Bette Midler. Nancy Meyer had naked pictures or compromising pictures of her somewhere, and that's how she showed up in this movie, because she's not even credited in this movie.
Well, isn't that like the director's style, though, in a way? Like, she directed
eight plots in this fucking movie. Been
like, nobody.
Like, The Father of the Bride. Didn't she direct The Father of the Bride?
Yeah,
she did.
And,
she
like,
did.
So she was always focusing on, like, the white male lead.
Are you saying, sir,
yeah,
that there is a Peter Jackson-esque director's cut that is 4.5 hours long?
Maybe.
Because, like, that's it. Like, because, like, let's walk through these plots.
Right.
We meet the, like, because at the end of the scene we've been talking about, like, he's trying to put on pantyhose. And by the way, I've never worn pantyhose, but I know you put it on like a sock.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you don't get the tears up the entire leg.
It's not classy.
Not classy. He waxes part of his like outer thigh.
Yeah.
He paints his toes, which he does an incredible job at. And for someone who's never painted a nail, he does his fingers and toes and they look great.
They look better than when I do them myself.
He does a pore strip.
Then
he dies because he slips on some bath beads.
Yeah.
Which I mean, whatever.
Those squish; they don't roll.
They like they're not marbles.
if you step on them, they just squish.
But at that point, he's three bottles of wine to the breeze. Anything could happen.
Yeah.
And then his daughter, who's 15, she's supposed to be 15, and her 18-year-old boyfriend, who is clearly 35. Come in and go, hey, Mr. Marshall?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Nick Marshall.
Nick Marshall.
By the way, every time they said Nick, I just got triggered a little bit. Just the slightest bit. I'm like, I'm not this bad.
That's weird, ain't it? When someone has the same name as you, you just turn back.
Well, at least when it's Samuel L. Jackson in the Avengers and he's Nick Fury,
mm-hmm.
I feel like...
You're empowered.
I have power.
You have power.
It's my chakra.
Like, I got
you. I feel, you know, just power there. When it's him... First of all, I'm probably 6 inches taller than Mel Gibson. And second, he's a scumbag. He's a scumbag. And then he electrocutes himself in the bathtub. He wakes up on the floor, and his vaguely Hispanic maid, who he calls babe twice. And she goes, like the pig, which is kind of a fat joke.
Mm.
And they do it like 3 times.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, I like how the scene sets up and stuff where you can't really hear her think. Her lips move, but it's always to the side and stuff. But I think that was a cool way of introducing his superpowers in a sense. But the fact that I feel like that's the last time we saw his maid in the movie was that scene, ain't it?
Well, we see her at the beginning when she wakes him up.
Right, twice.
We see, because he doesn't come in before 10, which is... First of all, if you want the promotion, you fucking show up, man.
He's an executive. Went to work at 10. Somehow went to a wedding.
He crashes his ex-wife's wedding, and she goes, it's your weekend with our daughter. And she goes, I'm 15. He's not a good dude.
He went back to work. This is a very, I don't want to say this to you, Nick, but there were some people associate like very... white male power move in the corporate ladder? That's not cool.
No.
Yeah.
It's not cool. It is not cool, Mr. Trinette. And at this point, he can kind of hear women.
Yeah.
He's not sure yet. He's not sure. But he just thinks everyone's actually telling him the truth, which is really funny because we first meet the intern. The woman that you pointed out is an American Horror Story.
Right.
Yeah, Sarah Paulson.
Yep. Sarah Paulson. He goes, who essentially says, "Hey, asshole, I got an Ivy League degree. I'm your intern." And he goes, "Excuse me?" And she goes, "What, Mr. Marshall?" And you're just like, guys, this, it doesn't need to take a half hour. This movie is 2 hours and 10 minutes. Like,
I know.
And then Jimmy Beer's just like, "I wonder if anyone would miss me if I'm dead." And you're just like, this is not this movie.
That was really sad. Yeah,
you need to cut something out here. We've already been introduced to the fact that the daughter wants to fuck. The ex-wife hates him.
Yeah.
Natalie Burton Ernie, or what's her name? Delta Burke. And Perini.
Valet Prine.
Thank you.
The door woman.
They love
wants
him regardless, and they think they're moving to the 44th floor.
Mm-hmm.
But they've lost. Helen Hunt is now in charge. Like, there's so much going on in this movie. You could cut out half of these plot lines.
Yeah,
man. You
definitely could.
The over-sexual door woman.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Loretta Devine.
That's Loretta Devine, I'm about to say. Even that's a hidden talent right there.
And he's thrown off by the fact that someone's actually attracted to him, which is weird. Because Loretta Devine just goes, "That's sweet ass." And he's like, "My goodness. No, dude, this is the attention you actually want."
Yeah. Looking like Shaft. I'm just like, well, that's a good comparison.
That first of all, it's not fair because Shaft is a fucking awesome. But,
yeah.
But it's just like she's calling a taxi for him and staring at his butt. And he is, I mean, and here's the thing, too. If they did 20% more, it would be better because it's the male gaze in reverse, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
If they were talking about, like, the fact that he was staring at cleavage the whole time and that someone was uncomfortable with it, but they don't stay on any scene for half, because you have to get 2.5 hours out of this stuff, so they just run with it. But if he was upset that she was staring at his ass and then he suddenly learns something and then, like, because the, like, at one point in this montage, we see him in, like, it's not yoga, but it's like in like a gymnastics class.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's listening to the women. And by listening to the women, we see him turn and look at sports bras, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What he should be doing is listening but not staring because he was objectified and he should feel bad about this. But he doesn't learn a damn thing until the very last minute of the movie where Helen Hunt fires him.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Come on, man.
I mean, he does the very guy thing where he tries to learn and the movie forces
him. But he has an erection and then it all falls apart.
Yeah, you know, they give him a moment with his daughter and things like that. He's attempting, but he's getting... He does the guy thing where he can try and guess what he wants. I mean, if I woke up tomorrow and I had the ability to, like, read people's thoughts, that'd be
you'd
a scary...
You'd immediately commit suicide? I don't want to know what people think about me.
I don't.
First
of all, I'm sure
neither.
They all think I'm, like, horrible.
And specifically, I don't know what women want to think about me. You know what I mean? It's a scary thing, you know, because, like, I'm already trying to read them without trying to read them, and then... When I know when I'm in during that thought process, they look at me and was like, "What the fuck are you? What's going on with you?" But I don't know.
Wouldn't he use what women want to actually, like, sell things? Like, he really does.
You would think. Well, let me ask.
And the only thing he does.
The only thing he does
is
find out who likes him.
And steal Helen Hunt's idea.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't think of anything. He doesn't get in anyone's
head. He doesn't
head
use any of his insight.
Steal someone's better idea about. A woman likes to run and be free. And you're just like, okay, I've also eaten Wheaties before. Like, what are you trying to do to me?
Well, may I ask you as well, like, would you ever want to know what men thought of 24/7, just in general? Not towards you, just like have that ability.
I thought it was boobs, booze, and sports, right?
Right. You're like, would you want, that's. Unfortunately, that's going to be like 90%.
Yeah.
Well, you're friends with our mutual friend, Candace.
Yes.
That's probably what she's thinking most of the time, too. And she'll tell you that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not different. And she's like, look at the butt on him or her or whatever. Like that. And the thing.
But I think everybody thinks stuff like that. Like I.
That's right.
When, you know, the girl in the movie lost her was going to lose her virginity, I lost my sober virginity at prom. So I've got
sure,
that.
I get that.
Me. But, you know, I think about a nice cocktail. If a
romantic evening.
If a person looks nice, male, female, if they look attractive, I will note that.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't think in the grand scheme of things, women and men think that much differently when it comes down to it.
Yeah. This is almost like a version of A Christmas Carol, right? Where, like, he's never thought about women before, and all of a sudden he's visited
by
three
insight?
Estrogen ghosts.
And also, why doesn't he hear? He should just be going mad constantly because he's always around all these people. Wouldn't he be hearing what every single woman's saying at the same time?
Right. Mm. Like, and then there's that happens for 1 second.
Yeah,
where he's in the park.
Yeah, in the park.
And they're like a women's running group.
It was the cult, the green cult. The yeah.
And they run past him, and he's like, ah! And he's like rending his garments. And by the way, the second he can hear a dog saying he wants to poop. She wants to poop. Very specifically, she, because it's a poodle and therefore a woman. Why does he not hear every squirrel? Why does he not hear, like, everything? Like,
yeah, he should just be, like, going mad. Like, it's just him slowly going crazy because he can't hear it.
So, again, like, all of a sudden it turns into some Eli Roth shit. He just has a gun in his mouth. Like.
Better ending.
Well, no, he goes to a psych. He goes to see his psychologist, his marriage counselor.
God. Okay, we've got to talk about Bette Midler here for a second.
The girl from Hocus Pocus and stuff. I just want the fact that it was just she had just weed on her for a second for emergencies.
So Bette Midler was apparently their couples counselor.
Yeah.
When they got the divorce, and he hasn't seen her in a decade. But he is such an asshole.
She remembers him.
That shit was funny.
That's bad.
Yeah. I remember I was watching it with my girlfriend. And when she goes into that little pocket or so just to get a quote-unquote cigarette. And she looked at me. And I told her, like, baby, that's weed. And she's like, Noor, everyone in the 90s rolled their own cigarettes. And then where he starts, like, sniff it. I just looked at her. I was like, she just has weed on handy and stuff. But I thought that was hilarious and stuff. But she never went with it. She didn't want to publish his psychology thinking or anything like that. I thought it was weird. She was worried about getting her eBay shit together.
Also, again, why is this here for half a second? This is another, like, like the G-plot. Like, and by the way, if he is really a marketing genius like he's supposed to be, he would realize the importance of being out there to hear what the other half are thinking, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Hell, even if he could read men's thoughts, he'd be a better advertiser.
True. Mm-hmm.
Right?
True.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I need Bette Midler in this movie, mm-hmm, to tell me that, you know, you could be better at your marriage if you could. Like, this is just such... Dude, I mean, come on, man.
No, like I said, I think Nancy Myers had something on Bette Midler, and she's like, okay, you get one day.
You get one day.
We'll see how it goes. It's one take. That's it.
In a gorgeous office.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in Nancy Myers.
It's Nancy Myers. That's
registered trademark.
Oh, God help me. But yeah, and so she goes, you know, you can take advantage of this and learn something in this fucking morality play. And he's like, nah, I don't think I will.
Yeah.
I'm going to instead try to have sex with Marissa Tomei. I don't even know if I'm telling the plot in order. Because this movie is just
Swiss out of whack. Cheese. It goes out of whack.
It goes crazy. We almost might as well focus on the fact that we can follow one plot at a time. Marissa Tomei is a woman who's working at a coffee shop because she's trying to be an actress.
As
not
you
really
do.
Working out. What up?
As you do.
As you do. In Chicago. Because nothing is like breaking into the acting scene in Chicago.
In Chicago, yeah.
But he's asked her out many times before. He's flirted with her. And the one thought he hears from her is, I wish I hadn't rejected him before. Mm. And so he asks her out one more time. She says, sure. And he has terrible sex with her.
Yep.
Is really funny.
Well, what he considered terrible sex, she loved it.
No. At first, he's terrible.
Yeah.
And then he goes into the bathroom to give his penis a pep talk, as you do. right? Because that's what he does. He goes, come on, man. What are you doing? No,
because, like, I'll be real with you. I don't want to hear what girls are thinking when it happens. I was watching, I was, like, cringing. And I'm like, my girl was like, what's wrong? She's like, you don't understand. I kind of understand what he's going through right now. I was like, what is she thinking and stuff like that? So I understand the beginning of it and then the bathroom scene.
Oh, but I know what I'm thinking sometimes. Like, okay, we need to get paper towels. And
balance your checkbook.
I'm like, did I pay the electric bill? that's what you'd be hearing. It's like,
why aren't you making eye contact? Because I'm literally making a shopping list right now, right? Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. Like, because he's in her head and she's like, ugh, God, this was not worth it.
Yeah.
He psychs himself out and then he goes back to the bathroom and he goes, I got this. And then round number two is she's rolling around like a puppy dog in a field. And she's like, oh my goodness, that was so good. That was so good. Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, in the third act, he says he's so good at sex because he's gay. Now, put a hard pause on the movie.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been there. Yeah, I'm sure.
We've all been there.
That's not how anything is. I'm sorry. If you rock Marissa Tomei's world, and then you go, I was so good at sex because I'm secretly gay. I don't know if she stabs you in the tires or in the chest, but like that doesn't make sense.
But that's what that's what goes with his character development, because as he were, he just wanted to do what, you know, he wanted to make sure that she wasn't crazy. So she wanted him to say that he was gay and able to make sure that she wasn't not that crazy. So
because there's so many plots going on.
Yeah.
He forgot she existed, as did the rest of the movie going public.
When she pops up, you forgot she existed because the whole Helen Hunt of the thing.
Dude.
Yeah.
And by the way, she is like, again, like the F plot. I don't know how to explain this to you guys, but like every woman that he comes in contact with, other than Delta Burke, has their own plot.
Yeah, backstory.
And Delta Burke, meanwhile, is just a whistling breeze. I don't know. Like, that's the worst joke. That's the worst joke. Like, he's reading minds. He comes to his two secretaries, and neither of them have a thought in their head.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, is even worse than the sex joke where she's putting together her tax return. Like, at least if she was like, I could go for a soda right now. It's bad, but at least she has human thought as opposed to being a cyborganizer or something. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what is happening in that movie. It's such a weird pull. All right, so, ladies and gentlemen, what's the next plot we have to talk about? Because, like, Helen Hunt's plot is just kind of the worst. Because she has almost no agency in her own story.
They shit on her a lot. Or she felt shits on a lot.
Now, I will say, though, the two of them clearly get along because I feel like they have chemistry. It's not necessarily romantic, though they do have a kiss. They get along well on the movie. So maybe he charmed her, she charmed him. Like, they get along. But that doesn't mean her character has anything to do. She's supposed to be the creative director.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, she has nothing. Like, she has no ideas, and whatever good ideas she has, he steals them, and then she doesn't stand up for herself once.
No.
And this is the part where my wife felt like the most target scout. It's okay. They're going to their own house.
The show is now turned into What Dogs Want.
That's right.
Starring Nick Hoffman.
Oh, dude, come on, man. Like, what was his name? The guy who was the dog whisperer?
Oh, Caesar.
Caesar Romero. No.
No, that's the Joker.
Caesar Chavez. No, that's the guy.
Caesar Milan.
Caesar Milan. Thank you.
Is that the
Fitzy?
No, that's the cat guy, dude. The you know what I'm talking about? The one.
He's the one that does that.
Yes, that.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Totally. What Dogs Want? Just Caesar Milan.
Better movie.
Better movie.
It would be.
Couldn't be worse. Well, what's the new one? What Men Want?
What Men Want.
Taraji. Is that good? You said you liked it.
With Taraji P. and Tracy Morgan. Max Greenfield is in that from Schmidt from New Girl. Kind of like the same premise. Kind of opposite, you know.
Is it funny?
I mean, I liked it. It's fun. No, I'm not
judging you. I'm judging, like, this one is clearly a rom-com where the romance takes head, right? Because he's supposed to be falling in love with Helen Hunt.
So, with the new movie, it would be Helen Hunt's movie if Mel Gibson wasn't in the way, in a sense like that, where she gets her come-ups and stuff and has the whole revelation.
Well, I mean, for Fitzy and me specifically, that was the Chappelle Show bit, where it was What Men Want.
Yeah.
And there's one woman who can read men's mind. And like, even like the cute, like 13-year-old kid goes like, damn that ass. and that's the gag.
That's the truth. That's the truth, as we all pointed out.
Oh, God.
You know?
Also, fucking unbutton your top button. I'm sorry, you're wearing a polo shirt underneath a blazer. You gotta unbutton.
Oh, talk about Mel. I was like, I'm wearing a hoodie. It's just
me too.
I'm wearing a novelty t-shirt from We Hate Movies, so we're fine. We're all fine. We're also all wearing like dark color. We're all in mourning, apparently.
Yeah, something like that.
All right. The third, ninth plot. let's talk about Helen Hunt for a bit. They're trying to get the Nike contract. And in a stupid IMDb trivia point, those women who are around the table were actually Nike executives.
Oh.
That's why they have no lines. But the whole time, they're trying to come up with this write-up as to how to advertise athletic gear to women. And living through the pandemic, I can tell you, as a man, I was not aware of how important athleisure was, but all of my lady friends knew how important athleisure was. I don't know what 2000 was like, but trust me, they got it. And so Helen Hunt's idea was, let's incorporate all the old staunchy, presumably men. The only other person we see do anything is Mel Gibson, but we assume it's mostly a male advertising team. Get in touch with feminine products, right? To try to get this Nike contract. And she has all these incredible ideas about, you know, women running free, running on the beach, blah, 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 which sounds fine. But he steals her ideas, pitches them to Alan Alda, and then goes over her head to show him directly, which, by the way, is also a dick move.
It's a complete dick move.
Because, like, what you do is give it to her as the creative director, and she says, that's what I was thinking, and then she, not necessarily is infantilized, but realized that maybe she doesn't belong there. But instead, you give it to the boss of the boss, and he is like, oh, I shouldn't have hired her in the first place, which is utter nonsense.
Isn't even if his intentions is like, I think at that point the movie was forcing you to fall in love with him, but then you're like, this dude's still an asshole. His intention, he still did that shit, and his intentions were wrong, even though it made you feel like he was doing the right thing. You know what I mean? But yeah,
and we haven't even gotten, because again, there's too many plots here. Judy Greer, who's just floating around like, what if I wasn't here tomorrow, would they even notice I was dead? And you're just like, what movie are we making?
Yeah. That's.
Oh, God.
When you have Judy Greer in a movie, you give her more to do.
And make her funny.
Yeah.
Because she's like here. She's just hilarious. So modelish. She's a sad sack, which is fine. But give it to anyone else, because Judy Greer can deliver a joke.
Exactly.
God, replace her with, what's her name? Sarah. The one from... American
Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson, yeah, I can see that.
Then she can be the sad sack. And Sarah, she's funny. Judy Greer is funny. She's Pam from Archer. She's in everything. Like, if you look her up, she probably
has she's been in everything.
Arrested Development is my favorite show with her in it.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. She's hilarious. And literally, her character is Erin the File Girl, right?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And she's just like, I'm going to die, and no one's going to care. And you're just like... What?
I'm surprised they didn't pick up on that, kind of didn't snip that.
I mean, like, I know what they're trying to do is to, you know, because he, you know, saved her from offing herself, and that's like how he's understanding women. But he could have done that whole thing with his daughter. That was enough to really prove his learnings, quote unquote, of what women like. It was just shoehorned in there.
Well, and it's a shame because you and I like Judy Greer.
I love Judy.
And she's in it for like. Probably a total of 15 minutes, and all she is like thinking about how she wants to kill herself.
Yeah.
And like, and again, full disclosure, the next thing we're going to record is for something later this month, 13 going on 30, and she's in that too, and she has more
to do. She's amazing in that movie.
Like, it comes out 4 years later, and she has so much more to do in 13 going on 30. Meanwhile, she's like the,
she's
like,
one note in this movie. She's one note. She's just the sad girl.
Which is a shame because she's like a utility infielder type. Like, she can be the funny friend or the crazy friend. Like, she's best when she's out of her mind, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, here we are. And again, like, this movie is just Swiss cheese. But you have notes, Noor. What do you got next?
Oh, I don't know how emotional I was when I watched this movie because I really wanted to get in the sense of what woman wants.
I'm sure.
You know, and I wrote the one of my biggest notes I got here. Has to do with Mel Gibson's character development.
Oh, no, I get you.
Yeah.
Because there were tampons in that box. So
there was tampons. Full disclosure, tampons scare me. I don't know why they do and stuff. Where could he put it? It's maybe a nose plug if you have a bloody nose or something like that. Or
well, he did nearly electrocute himself. He probably was bleeding from the nose and ears.
It could have.
If the next morning he woke up with a tampon in each nostril and each ear, that'd have been funny.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, you can buy tampons. It's okay. I've gotten them on the shopping list.
Yeah.
You don't have to be embarrassed.
No, I mean,
gives a shit. Literally, no one gives a shit if you're buying pads.
Is that still a thing? I always thought that was like a trope of like men
I get nervous when I buy
pads. I hope it's not a thing.
Yeah. Because I have to FaceTime my girl. I'm like, so which one is it? Do you want the lemon? Is it lemon scented
tampon? Do you want
tampon?
Your cooch to smell like lemon, right?
That's what I'm saying.
No, yeah. I mean, again, my wife says the brand because it's very brand specific.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I buy anything.
Yeah.
I don't care. Yeah. Like, now, if there's a Kroger Plus sale,
yeah,
I will use that Kroger Plus card and right. say, hey, sir, this was supposed to be 30 cents cheaper.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. Costco, you can get like 500 of them for like $80. I'm just saying. I know that because it's the same.
I will say, it's one of those, it's not an awkward conversation, but you're just like, do you need a Costco? How bad is your period this month? Do you need a Costco's worth? Like, is there, like, is this low tide? Like,
there's no expiration date on those things.
That's true. I mean, to be fair, you're right.
I mean, okay, so let's talk about this. Okay, it's off the movie for a second, but since we're talking about the conversation.
Really?
No, I'm just saying, okay, so, like, all right. The time, you know, you have a daughter.
I do.
Did you not a little feel like, oh my God, my little one, she's going to go to prom and I'm going to help her pick up prom dresses and things like that. And I was always afraid to have that conversation. Like with my, like when I had the conversation, the talk with my father and my mom, I was just like, this is ridiculous because like, well, first of all, I had it when I was 22, both times. It was like a week apart from each other. I was like, I already did something, but you can tell me the aftermath of it. But just having that conversation about womanly stuff. If I have a daughter, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to be like choked up and stuff. It's just, it terrifies me.
I will say my talk, quote unquote talk with my father was more of a consent talk than anything.
Mm.
I mean, honestly, it was just like, look, and not my dad was like a rapscallion or something, but he's just like, look, you'll figure this out on your own. You're going to. No, it's true. Yeah. Like, and he goes like, look, just make sure whatever you want to do, she's on board with first, because that's all that matters. You're at the age where you're going to figure things out, but just make sure that you listen to her first. And that's the best advice, because that's effectively what Mel Gibson, even in this movie, settles on.
Yeah.
Which is that the daughter wants to say no eventually when the boyfriend wants to hook up with her.
And I felt that when he had that, yes, that didn't happen.
But, like, it's the thing, like, again, we all lost our virginity at some point, right? Just make sure everyone's on the same page when it happens. Like, that's the good advice. And then it also turned out to be about the thing about hygiene, you know, you should wash yourself. And I'm like, thanks, Dad. Not that I hadn't figured that out, but, you know, like, but that's the thing. And he goes, you want to touch her boobs? Is she okay with that? All right. And the thing was, the dude here wanted to have sex. She didn't. He hooked up with someone else, which is weird. The idea that you had a backup at prom is a weird move.
Well, you know, in the AARP that he belongs to, I'm sure they had other women.
He probably hooked up with one of the teachers at the same age.
I know.
But that's the game that they're playing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's, like, crying in the bathroom, and so he goes into another stall. Okay, Fitzy, had you seen this before?
I did when it first came out.
Did you have a fake memory? Because I had a fake memory that her friends thought that Mel Gibson was cute.
I mean,
he acts like it's a sleepover, but that's not what you call
it.
Yeah. But they're hanging out, and they're, like, having these thoughts, like, he doesn't have any food in the house, what is he doing, yada, yada, yada. And so he decides, like, look, I'll take you to get a dress. I will get some pizza. What do you guys want on the pizza?
Yeah.
And she goes, and they think, oh, he's so nice. He's such a good dad. My memory was one of them thought he was cute. And I was just like, we're going to have weird stuff. But luckily, all of it stays age appropriate. It all stays age appropriate, except for
Cameron.
Who really does look like, if you told me he was like, the Bayside Strangler or something. Like, he was a serial killer. He's just like, you could be my dad. And he was like, all right, perv.
Can you talk about he tried to kill himself twice in this movie?
Oh, dude. So the first day he hears what women want, the second day, he goes out like he's Bruce fucking Almighty, and he has, like, a hairdryer to the sky. He's recreated the whole night, and then he gets struck by lightning like he's in Short Circuit. And my God, the next morning he wakes up on a couch, and he still can hear What Women Want. Oh, God help me. This movie is so bizarre. I mean, let's wrap it up. Helen Hunt has had all of her ideas stolen, and so Alan Alda decides to fire her.
Yeah. After she gets an apartment that is not Nancy Meyer-ized yet.
Right.
It's got the potential. I would have liked to have seen it Nancy Meyer-ized by the end of the movie, but unfortunately that was not to be.
That was not to be, no. And so it's all... I mean, it's a gorgeous, huge apartment in Chicago.
That's what you want. That's what you want.
Also, this part is what bothered my wife, which is that she was apparently a big player at some other firm, and she left to become the creative director at this other firm, and yet she can't just find a job? Like,
I know.
Like, she's like, well, I guess I'm going to lose this place. I'm like, no! You are the most talented, like, you're in demand. And she wasn't fired because she, like, was incompetent. She was just fired because she turned out to not be
as good.
She also probably got a huge amount of money to being to end the contract that early. She gets to keep the place.
Settled. She said she settled on something, so you couldn't like get a house with that or finish or stay here.
Or move into your Nancy Meyer apartment. I want to see the Nancy Meyer apartment.
We saw everything else.
Right. And then Mel Gibson shows up and he feels bad and they're dancing to Frank, which is just apparently playing outside.
Well, you know, I was in Chicago in March and I didn't hear any Frank. I heard some Tony Bennett.
There you go. Frank Sinatra. That almost would have worked. And then Mel would have stomped his feet and goes, no, it's not Frank. I would have taken Dean Martin, but not Tony Bennett.
Oh, I like the Ben man.
I like Tony.
Me
Ben
and Lady Gaga.
If you haven't heard John Mulaney's bit on What's New Pussycat, you need to hear it.
With Tom Jones. That was Tom. Was it with?
That's Tom Jones.
That was Tom Jones.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Anyway, they dance. He goes, "This is where your bed would be. I'm a serial killer." And then. He goes back to Alan Alda the next day. He says, I stole all our ideas. This was a mistake. You shouldn't have fired her. Right?
Yep.
And basically. And he's still there. Men. In my room.
I mean, it's such a bureaucracy. It's very bizarre.
You've watched Mad Men. It's the same thing, just with no liquor in the offices and no hats. You know.
Well, he has a hat. He dances.
Well,
with a hat
that's his dancing hat.
We all have fedoras.
That's not his working hat. That's his dancing hat.
That's dancing fedora. Oh, dancing hat. That made my evening. Okay. So, other than his dancing hat, sorry. Do you have notes?
This is gonna make y'all hate me.
Please.
But this is what I wrote. This particular note. It was to justify the 54% rating on Rotten Tomato. And this is the only good part. All right, and just about the story. I go deep into this shit. All right,
please.
So within his realm as he grew up to the man that he is now, you kind of understand that connection he had with his mother and how his lifestyle it is now. And yet, when he was reading women's thoughts, yet he had like a personal connection to yet. He understood them and he tried to get what he wanted, but then he evolved into such that even though at some point he kind of figured out what his mother could have gone through because he kind of understood how these women are now, because at a sense of point he was kind of jamming with them until the end where he felt bad and shit like that. So I feel like there's a bit of a character development with Mel Gibson's character, at least what they force on you if you really look for it. But he is a piece of shit.
He is. So let's wrap this together then.
Yeah.
Let's end this.
Okay.
Helen Hunt and him get back together. Alan Alda agrees to get her job back, kinda. And because he has to be the savior type, Mel Gibson goes, look, I'm sorry, I stole your ideas. She doesn't ask any questions.
Nope.
We have to talk about how he loses his powers, which is that he realizes that Judy Greer didn't show up, and the file girl, because the file girl, the other executive assistants, I guess, are like, man, these files sure are piling up. And they're like, where the hell is that woman who does this for us? And then all of a sudden we have this montage where Mel Gibson's like, what if I didn't show up? Would anyone notice I'm gone? Would anyone notice I'm gone? Turns out it took until she was gone for anyone to
Let's talk about
mission accomplished, Judy Greer.
That's right.
Let's talk about the weird Chinatown moment.
Well, right. And then he goes to chase her down. She lives in Chinatown. And there's this vague Asian woman who's just like, this way. And you're just like, is this like a gypsy woman in like a Stephen King? Like, does she control the power?
That's what I'm saying. Where was her plot point? She could have been in the movie. It's like the whole Freaky Friday situation.
Yeah, they give the cookie.
Meanwhile, Judy Greer has written a note, like a suicide note, right? And then busts, like, and Mel Gibson knocks down the door, sees the note, is panicking, sees the open bottle of pills, is panicking. And Judy Greer just comes out of the bathroom, and your weird boss, who's like a sexual predator, is in your room, and he's like, I saw your work, and there's an opening because apparently I just strangled someone to death. And now you can fill that position instead of killing yourself? ? And you're just like, what is happening? Nancy, there's easier ways to wrap up your movie than a suicide attempt. Because apparently, he just gets rained on by sparks in Chinatown and he loses his magic. Because after four times getting electrocuted, you can stop hearing what women want. I guess. I don't know.
It's ancient Chinese secret.
Ancient Chinese, that fortune cookie. He did give out serial killer vibes, though, at the end.
Dude, he's just sitting on her bed being like, what are you thinking? And you're just like,
what if we wanted to imagine the movie in Judy Greer's eyes the whole time? Dude, yo, think about that.
There's a great, like, fake horror movie trailer where you're, again, switch Judy Greer for generic nothing woman who is from American Horror Story. Mm-hmm. And just, it's through her eyes, just like, all of a sudden he, like, goes from misogynist to, like, reading women's thoughts, and he's Hannibal Lecter now, and he's just killing women.
I can see that.
My most beautiful woman of all.
Just switch up the music of the movie.
Instead of jaunty Nancy Meyers music, it's just like discordant Chris Nolan music, and just like, I can read what women want. Dude, better movie. 100% better movie.
Better movie.
It's like that new Invisible Man movie that came out last year. Oh, yeah. Instead of just being invisible, he can read women's thoughts.
Oh,
straight horror,
creepy.
Like
yes,
especially if it's Mel Gibson and he, you know, he's like an anti-Semitic.
Mel Gibson now,
sugar tits just floats through the air. Anyway, so one of you describe the scene where they make up at the end, Helen Hunt and him.
I'm not gonna lie to you. It was I felt like them making out was supposed to them have sex in each time that movie. You know what I'm saying? She's like, you were an exceptional kisser and stuff like that. Uncomfortable, you know, like, why'd you go back to him after all that? But yeah.
She dumped his ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she fired him. So there, but
right.
I also would not, now he's going to be unemployed. He'll lose his apartment and his big wine goblets.
Mm. Maybe she'll move into his place just to spite him.
That's true.
That would be not. That would be.
That'd be.
Dude, fun. The I'll sequel. Know. She's living in his place.
I can see that.
He's working for Twitter, and
he's walking. He's a dog walker walking that little poodle that has to poo poo.
Oh my god! Can you imagine? Caesar Milan kicks him out. Yeah, so, I mean, that's it. They make out, and she fires him for stealing her ideas, and they make out again, and that's the end of the movie.
And then I would fire him for kissing, just to make a point.
Just for touching me.
Yeah.
I'm your boss. You don't make out with me.
No.
And again,
sexual harassment.
For a movie that's this long and has this many B-plots, it just ends. It's weird.
Yeah, that was. I was kind of like, that's it? Because I forgot, because I hadn't seen the movie in such a long time. Like, that's the end?
Well, I thought she would have her comeuppance or something.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for.
But no, it just fucking ends. It's very bizarre. Like,
I think Nancy Meyers finally went, oh, how long is this movie? Oh, we just got to end it.
Right. Like, and again, there's the Peter Jackson director's cut that's 12 hours long. Like,
that's what I want to see.
I mean, it would almost make, and again, what is it? The Queen's Gambit is fine. but it could have been a 2-hour movie. This is the opposite. If you're going to make this movie, make it a 6-episode miniseries. Because, like, there's so much going on here. Like, you saved Judy Greer's life and gave her a job. What's her first week like? Because I hope she had talent. Otherwise, she's just going to kill herself at the end of the episode anyway. Right? It's just like, man, just throws it on the pyre. And by the way, Helen Hunt didn't rehire her. It was Mel Gibson gave her the promotion. Helen Hunt's like, what the hell? You're gone. Yeah. Like, yeah. And then her and Mel Gibson have to kill Helen Hunt. That's a sequel.
I'd watch it.
Well, do you think do you think Helen Hunt would go in and clean house after Mel Gibson was gone to get rid of all of his toadies?
Oh, that one guy. We didn't
Delta
talk about
Burke and Valerie Perrine were probably going to be out of a job the next day.
The guy who looks like Bill Burr's stunt double, who everyone thinks apparently is gay. We didn't talk about him, but he's like, why can't I hook up with all those ladies you have sex with? And they're all like, I think he's gay. And Mel Gibson's like, I think they think you're gay. And he's like, I'm gay? Why? That's like the H plot. Like, I don't know what matters in this movie.
I guess there needed to be another guy.
Alan Alda. You have Alan Alda, who's, by the way, not a sexual predator in this movie. He's an asshole. He's aloof.
He's always an asshole in the movies that I watch. And I want to, because I want to love him.
Alan Alda is a charmer.
Because he has it.
You need to watch MASH.
I do. Mean,
I'm not 1,000 years old, but he is charming.
Yeah.
I see it.
Anyway, we've talked about this movie to death. So, Noor, what's your final thought?
At the end of the day, I never want to know what people think of me. And this movie kind of depicts that in a sense. But the movie itself was interesting, to say the least.
Thank you. Christine?
Well, this movie came out when I was working at Planet Hollywood, working on their website, because we used to do movie reviews.
Sure.
And I remember, because we used to have to, if it was a Bruce Willis movie or any of the partners of Planet Hollywood, we had to weed out the bad reviews and we couldn't post those. But with this one, I got full rights to do, and there were not a lot of good reviews. And when we actually watched this last night, I'm like, I wonder if this is going to age well. Spoiler alert, it does not.
Yeah.
It is a garbage movie. It is probably, I mean, to say a Nancy Meyers movie is the worst Nancy Meyers movie with some of the ones she's put out, it is terrible.
Yeah.
I would never watch it again. I want to, like, take the USB that it's on right now and throw it in the garbage. Yeah. If you're going to waste Judy Greer and all those actresses, Sarah Paulson,
yeah,
Valerie Perrine, Delta Burke, Bette Midler, don't even get me started again.
Yeah.
There's no reason. It's not even a good hangover movie, because it would make me mad. And I don't want to be mad and have a hangover.
That's why I waste rented Alan Alda. He's not in it that much.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, to your point, I don't know why I saw this in, like, 2001, 2002, other than, I mean, Mel Gibson, right? Like, I guess. He was just charming and everywhere. But, like, there were scenes I remember. I remember the scene where he's trying to wax his legs. Yeah. I remembered, like, the electricity for no reason. Like, there's just, like, when he's in Chinatown, there's just, like, literally electricity raining down on him. But, like, rewatching this, even, like, there's other weird rom-coms that we'll probably do, like You Got Mail. They aren't this long. This movie has so much. Right?
Like, yeah, I thought it was going to be a tight 90. And I saw the running time. I was like, 2 hours? I'm like, for what?
If it was 100 minutes instead of 125,
yeah,
that's a movie I can stomach. But you're right, it's not a hangover movie because it's so nothing.
Yeah.
And there's just too many subplots, and they introduce too many characters that go nowhere, and it's just frustrating. She's like, well, what happened to her? Yeah. You know?
Anna Gasteyer is one of the women in the office that he's making jokes around the coffee pot.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's a woman... I believe it's Dina Marie Rivera, Stella. He just, like, smacks on the ass and tells misogynistic jokes to. And her next thought is, I wish he wouldn't tell another one of those jokes. And you're like, well, yeah.
We've all said that about Mel Gibson.
Right. Yeah. But also, like, why is this in this? Trim it down. Trim anything down. Like, and at the end, like, Helen Hunt kisses him and says, you're fired. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah,
and
just,
like, give her any agency. Like, then we see she's running the company.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly. Just like her unveiling the successful campaign or something.
Or instead, he becomes the creative director, Nike hires her or something. Like, yeah. let her get back on her feet. But instead, it's all like in the like ephemera. This movie, like, if you haven't seen it, it's almost a novelty, but it's not worth seeing because it's so bizarre. Like, and again, Mel Gibson is now tainted. But if you're going to watch a Mel Gibson movie, at least watch Lethal Weapon or one of his good movies. This movie is just
I'd even offer Burn on a Wire just because I love Goldie Hawn.
Sure, sure. And by the way, for half a second, I thought it was Goldie Hawn along with...
with Delta Burke?
With Delta Burke. Which almost would have been there. But this movie's just such a mess.
It really is.
For a rom-com, it feels awkward. I guess if you like Frank Sinatra, watch it. But in the meantime, we're out of time. So thanks to Noor and Christine.
Sorry.
We're out. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My Opium and Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Sheriff Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Wright. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.